An insanely busy and active business day in our country today. A lot of it centered around the Fed meeting. And here's how the press conference started, with Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell giving the update.
Inflation is much too high, and we understand the hardship it is causing, and we're moving expeditiously to bring it back down. We have both the tools we need and the resolve that it will take to restore price stability on behalf of American families and businesses. The economy and the country have been through a lot over the past 2 years and have proved resilient. It is essential that we bring inflation down if we are to have a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all.
Those were just the first 28 seconds of an hour-long back and forth. And as that happened, and after he stopped talking, the markets reacted really great. Here to explain why is Ted Rossman. We'll jump into more than that as well. Industry analyst at Bankrate. And Ted, happy Wednesday. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
What was the good news? What are some people so excited about on the markets today?
I think the big pop in the markets was because Chair Powell indicated that the Fed will not raise rates 75 basis points at the next meeting. That had been widely expected. He indicated that they won't do more than a half point move at any given time. So I think that was a little bit of relief rally. The half point increase that we did get today was very well telegraphed in advance. But I really think it was that foreshadowing of the smaller increase in June that I think that's what markets were cheering.
Yeah, and I want to kind of pick his brain as to why. He's darned if he does, darned if he doesn't, right? Because people are saying the Fed is late to the game to help fix this problem, and then they're worried they're going to overcorrect. Is there some indicator that he thinks inflation may just go down naturally, and that gives him the reason, gives them the reason not to do 0.75 points? Or is it something else?
It is interesting because this is a theme that we've seen in the recent past with the Fed as well. The other thing is that he seemed to indicate a little bit of a slower tapering of the bond portfolio, which was another thing that I think that investors liked. But we remember back to the last rate hiking cycle, which was from 2015 to 2018, and the Fed did not move very fast. It was a pretty slow pace, and they didn't really end up getting all that far. In total, they ended up doing 9 quarter-point hikes, and then they ended up unwinding 3 of those in 2019, and then we know what happened when COVID hit. They immediately dropped right back down to 0. But I think that this has been a patient Fed, and I think that, you know, maybe some of what we're getting the impression here is that some of the expectations were maybe a little bit high, like this idea that the Fed funds rate may end the year at 3%. I mean, it may be that it's a little bit less than that, which I think is another thing that markets are cheering. You know, as far as what this means for everyday people, your credit card rates are definitely going up, and other variable rates like home equity lines of credit. Anybody getting a new mortgage, I mean, we've already seen a 2 percentage point rise since the end of last year. So there's a lot of moving and shaking going on here. One silver lining could be better savings rates. Those are finally moving out of the basement.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about I-bonds earlier today with John Williams. Terry Savage talked about it too during the business lunch. Obviously, that's a whole different thing, but an area where you could see some growth and moving away from CDs and savings accounts. But again, as you're saying, we might get better rates there. All right, Ted Rossman, I'm going to put you on hold. We're just getting started as our reaction to the Fed meeting continues. Hey, everyone, Your Money Matters, 619 here on 720 WGN. Continuing our chat with Ted Rossman from Bankrate. And Ted, I hate to put this on your shoulders, but can you explain the Fed balance sheet? You mentioned the tapering that would take place of this $9 trillion balance sheet. On Mondays, we do a segment called Explain It to Me Like I'm 10. I think I'm going to ask you to explain it to me like I'm 5, Ted.
Yeah, so basically, there's a couple things the Fed is doing here. We talked about how they're raising interest rates. Well, another thing that they're doing is unwinding their balance sheet. Basically, they've bought all of these securities, you know, mortgage-backed securities and bonds. And the Fed has done this, you know, especially in 2020, 21, when things were not so good, you know, as a way to shore up the financial system. Well, now they need to unwind this, and they need to sell a lot of these securities. So that was another thing they announced today, is that they're starting this process. It's going to move a little bit slower than some people had feared. So that's actually being cheered by markets, the fact that they're going to start by unwinding $47.5 billion in Treasury and mortgage-backed holdings in June. And they'll do that from June through August, and then in September, they're going to double the pace. But we talked earlier about how these interest rate hikes are maybe going to be a little bit slower than some people had thought. Same thing with this balance sheet runoff. So that's something that I think investors are mostly happy about.
Yeah. I mean, but isn't it a better thing for the Fed eventually to have not much on the balance sheet? I mean, I know that people don't want them to sell it all at once, but I guess they're just trying to hit this spot, right? A sweet spot of how much to sell to get to a lower point. Because I think everyone agrees that, you know, Fed having a smaller balance sheet in general is a good thing. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Some people fear that, you know, the markets have been sort of artificially propped up these last few years. And I don't mean just during COVID times, even before that, you know, really ever since the Great Recession, rates have been artificially low. We really never talked about 0% interest rates. And then now we've had them for the better part of the last decade and a half. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's some of what markets are adjusting to. And a lot of the volatility we've seen this year is, you know, that famous quote about the Fed takes the punch bowl away right when the party's getting good. I mean, this is something that, you know, there's lots of ramifications for investors and risk assets and all that. But yeah, really what the Fed is doing here is sort of slowly getting back to normal. But we've gotten so used to things out of normal that it's just causing a lot of repricing of stocks and bonds.
Have we had enough hurt yet? And I quote Terry Savage, who was on earlier with John Williams, talking about, you know, that we may not have reached the bottom. And I'm not asking you to prognosticate. No one else can. But there is this sense of that we were going to get quite a, well, we've already gotten a correction, and or at least in two of the markets, we were maybe going to get into the bear for all three. Is that a weird question to ask? Is there been enough hurt to justify us reaching the bottom, or is it impossible to tell?
It's so hard. I mean, even the best investors in the world, like Warren Buffett, I mean, it's so hard to say where the bottom is and where the market may be going tomorrow or next week or next month. You know, that is something a lot of people are talking about. Is this the bottom? Is it not? You know, I think a lot of the things that I've been reading say that there may be kind of a short-term rally, but then we may not have seen the lows of the year yet. I mean, it's hard to say for sure. I think the main message for people is that as long as you're invested appropriately for the long haul and for your risk tolerance, I mean, like for most people, if you're saving for retirement or you're saving for a goal that's a little further off, you just want to stick with it. You don't want to sell low. You don't want to try to time the market. I mean, you just want to kind of hang in there over the long haul. There's a lot to worry about in the economy, but it's interesting to me that a lot of the hard data is exceeding the expectations. For all the talk about recession worries and the Fed and higher interest rates and war in Ukraine and COVID and all these things we worry about, there are a number of bright spots too, like the job market, and delinquencies are low, and you know, most people are doing pretty well, I would say.
Yeah, Craig Bolanos, who comes on this program in the Winter's Business Lunch, asked me the other day, does it look like a recession near you? Does it feel like one at work? And if it doesn't, you know, don't necessarily buy into the hype. Not that there couldn't be or won't be. Of course, there will be at some point in the future. And so, talking about interest rates, in the interim, if you're someone that does carry more credit card debt than you should or that you feel comfortable with, I guess with these higher interest rates, that's something to tackle immediately if possible, correct?
Correct. I think that should be the top priority. Just because credit card rates are so high, the average is 16.5%. It could well be 18.5% or 19% by the end of the year. Get a 0% balance transfer card. These last as long as 21 months. Cards like the Wells Fargo Reflect or the Citi Simplicity or Citi Diamond Preferred, it's really a great way to pause that interest clock and save you hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars, depending on how much you owe.
Yeah, and the only hit you would take is just the credit hit for opening another account, right? That's the only ding to the score.
And that's a small ding in the short term. None of those cards charge annual fees. They do charge balance transfer fees of 3-5% of the amount that you're moving. So for most people, that's probably a couple hundred bucks. I think it could be well worth it, though, because you think about how much interest is accumulating every month if you're at 16.5% or more, and just the dangers of minimum payments and how that can really trap you for decades in some cases. Paying way more than the minimum is a great strategy, yes. And enlisting a 0% balance transfer to help is a great idea. Maybe nonprofit credit counseling or a low-rate personal loan, taking on a side hustle. These are all some good credit card debt payoff strategies.
Ted, you are speaking my language here. And just for anyone that's listening that goes, 0% transfer, what? Yes, you got to search for a card that gives you a lot of months at 0%. And even if there is that 3% charge, do the math, people. You transfer that balance that you have to a 0%. Take however many months it is, chop it up into that many months, and just set those automatic payments and figure out the rest, Ted, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. And, you know, as long as you can stick to that plan,
yes.
About half of these are not paid off in the allotted time, and then when the clock expires, then the interest rate goes way up. So banks are doing this as a customer acquisition tool, but it's not entirely out of the goodness of their heart.
Right.
I mean, they are hoping that at some point people carry balances, but if you can really stick to it, the average credit card debt is about $5,500. So if you do one of these balance transfers and you divide that by 21 months and you pay about $263 a month, that's what it takes to get out of debt within those 21 months. So that actually, breaking it into those chunks, makes it feel a lot more affordable.
Ted, did you just do the math in your head on that?
I've run those numbers before.
Okay. That was great. Ted, I really appreciate you being here, breaking this all down, and we'll be sure to talk to you again soon, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Ted Rossman from Bankrate. Always great to put things into perspective and a few helpful tips as well for you to bring on home.